Welcome, everybody, to the Diecast Movie Podcast. For this episode, we have a special interview brought to you by my dad. Take it away, Dad.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 203 of the Diecast Movie Podcast, the movie discussion podcast where the genre in the movie is decided by the roll of a die, and we also do interviews, too. And today we'll be doing an interview with Herb Boomhauer, which you'll be hearing in just a minute. I just remind that first-time listeners, if you go back, we have lots of other interviews in the podcast with the likes of Ron Perlman, Louis Gossett Jr., Adrian Barbeau, Caroline Monroe, and many, many more. So I hope you go back and look at those. And we also have tons of different movie discussions, musicals, horror, basically every genre you can think of is covered. Of all different years of cinema history are covered in there. So just feel free to look in our back catalog, and you will see something, I'm sure, that'll interest you. And if you want, follow us by hitting the subscribe button, whatever podcast catcher you're using. And when new episodes will come out, you'll know right away. And again, it's free, so it doesn't hurt you at all. Otherwise, let's get into the interview. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the latest episode of the Diecast Movie Podcast. This is Steve, and today I'm going to be joined with Herb Boomhauer, who's a dancer, who's been in several different classical musical movies that we've all seen. Hello, Dolly, Mame, Grease, The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. He also was a dancer in different musicals that were on stage. And I want to say I met him just recently at the Mid-Atlantic Nostalgia Convention. And I want to give a big thanks to Martin Grahams for letting me know, hey, you know, there's a walking celebrity going around who's been in different movies. You might want to seek him out to do an interview. So thanks again, Martin. But right now, I want to welcome to the show, Herb. How you doing today?
Great. How about you, Steve?
I'm doing well. We're recording this on a beautiful fall Sunday morning, and it's just lovely outside where I'm at. I think it's probably the same where you're at because we're just neighboring states. I don't think the weather's too much different, right?
It's wonderful here. I've been having this whole past week, the windows open without having to use air conditioning. It's been great.
It's nothing like having natural air conditioning just to get a chance to air out the house and let everything get that nice, good smell.
Exactly.
And you've been coming to the Mid-Atlantic Nostalgia Convention, I think, for a while, just as I have. Just an idea, what are some of the people you look for when you go to the convention?
Well, I've been a big movie fan from the classic. Well, I came along, it was still the classic era. But, you know, so for me, it was just great nostalgia seeing all these wonderful people. I first went to Marty's show about 13 years ago because I saw in one of the trade papers that Patty Duke was going to be a guest there. And I grew up absolutely adoring her. And I don't know if I wanted to drive that far, but I said, well, I've got to meet Patty Duke. So I did, and she was just wonderful. And I'm glad I did now because she has since passed away. But it was a wonderful show, and I didn't get to know Marty yet, but I started going every year, and then we started talking. And then we got to be really good friends all these years. And, you know, I haven't missed one. Well, that's not true. They canceled the one in 2020 because of COVID. Otherwise, I would have been there. But it's just mainly just wanting to see the great stars, you know, and they, for the most part, they've all been very, very gracious.
It's a beautiful convention. It's nice. It's laid back. You really get to talk to people. And a lot, I think the celebrities or stars that come to the show are really there to give thanks to those that have helped support them over the years and really learn about us as we learn about them. So I think it's, from my experience, you going there, and it's just been a wonderful time.
Yeah, I agree completely. And Marty's a great guy. He runs a great show. But what's really neat is that the people that volunteer for him, they're just as great as he is, and they're just super friendly. They like people. And because of that, I've gotten to be really good friends with his staff, his mother-in-law and father-in-law, his wife. You know, it really is a family affair there.
That definitely is. And I can't give credit to the staff enough because a lot of these conventions, you know, people will give credit to the one who runs it like Martin, but it's just without all the people helping out, he wouldn't be able to get the convention running, and also to get the support that he sends to St. Jude's Children's Hospital, which is one of the things I love about their convention, is that the profits that they do make go to St. Jude's.
Yeah, I wish more people knew that. Marty doesn't make a dime on this personally. You're right, it's all charity. And if I'm not mistaken, he's going to be opening a coffee shop near where he lives soon. And I think most, if not all, the profits of that are going to go to charity. So he's really a good man.
I think so too. And I know people are saying, well, we're talking about Martin a lot. Let's get talking about Herb, because it is an interview for you.
Yeah, I love talking about him too.
But it is how we met. So it kind of sets the whole stage up. So when you were younger and you were, what were some of the movies that you gravitated to growing up? Because you said you liked the classical films and things like that. So what were some of the films when you were growing up that you were just drawn to?
Well, anything that was from the Disney studio. Mr. Disney was still alive then, and all of his films were family-oriented. And so there was something my parents could let me see. But, you know, you talk about when I was attending movies, it was still pretty much the classic era. I consider the classic era to go pretty much through the 60s, and then movies really began to change. But I would go to all of the Walt Disney films, and because they were wonderfully entertaining. Like I said, you could take your whole family to see it. It was just, I liked that. I liked anything. As I started to get a little older, I started really liking the Beach Party movies with Frankie and Annette. And to me, they were the height of sophistication. if you can imagine, you know, but you know, when you were growing up in the 1960s, we were a little more innocent than kids of that age are today, I think. But it was a lot of fun. That's why I went to see movies, because they were fun. Some years later, I met Roberta Shore at the Williamsburg Convention, and she had been in The Shaggy Dog. And that came out in 1959. My parents took me to see that. And she came on screen, and I was just instantly struck by this beautiful young girl who I don't think was all that much older than I was, but she was like a later teenager. And I was so enamored of her that at one point in the movie, she gets knocked off a yacht into the river, and it upset me so bad I started crying. And my parents are saying, no, 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 it's all make-believe. It's all make-believe. She's not her. She's not. And just then, of course, the shaggy dog swims up and takes her to safety. And so all was well with the world again. But I told Roberta Shore this story years later, and she just shook her head. She just thought that was funny. But it was movies like that I enjoyed seeing.
I love it when you watch a movie and it's able to transport you into the fantasy world that it's set up. Mm-hmm. And if it's done well enough, you just feel totally enveloped in it. And yes, it could be a movie like The Shaggy Dog or the Shaggy D.A., which was, I believe, the sequel and things like that. But if you're at the right age at the right time, those movies are just magical.
Oh, absolutely. I agree.
Now, what led you going down the decision to become a dancer? Was it something that your parents forced you to do when you were younger, or is it something that you were always doing as soon as you learned how to walk, you were already dancing?
No, not really. My mother had been a big band singer in the World War II years. She was not anyone well that you would ever heard of, but there were a lot of these ladies during the 1940s that went around the country up and down the Eastern Seaboard and sang the popular songs of the day. And, you know, my favorite songs to this day, my favorite music is music from the 1940s. Cause I just love big band. And so that's what she did. And then she got married and, you know, started to have a family. And I don't think she was ever totally fulfilled with that, but, she thought I might have some talent, and so I got all the dancing lessons that little kids are put through, and acting lessons and singing lessons, and, you know, trying to balance that with school and everything. And then in the later 60s, they were going to make the movie version of Hello, Dolly. And they had put out pretty much a cattle call for dancers, and it was very competitive, and I was lucky, you know, that I got one of the dancing roles, especially at my age. So that was a big thrill to do that, and to fly out to California. And the first movie studio I'd ever been into was 20th Century Fox, where we filmed it. And it was a big thrill to just be part of that and to see everything about a stage, you know, the lighting, everything, cameras, the whole works. It was just terribly exciting. And that's how it started, you know, just from having lessons growing up and then taking a chance and, you know, getting that break.
And now let people know, what number were you dancing in Hello Dolly? Because people are going to be like, wow.
There were two. The first one was called The Waiter's Gallop. I was one of the dancing waiters. And we didn't come along until after the intermission. So we were in the second half of the film. And then we did the Hello Dolly number with Miss Streisand. So it was those two numbers. And it was like two or three sound stages put together for this scene. It was called a big restaurant called the Harmonia Gardens Restaurant in the play. And so Fox had put together these sound stages together to make one big room. And if you've ever seen the film, you know how enormous that set was.
Oh, I've seen it. I've seen it a few times over the years. For your first movie, you know, one of your two numbers, and one of them, it's, you're doing Hello Dolly in Hello Dolly. I mean, come on.
it was pretty much fun, you know, but it was a lot of hard work. I think maybe people of today are finally starting to get the idea that it's all fun, but it's more hard work than anything else. You can rehearse and film for weeks at a time, you know, and it just, people don't, they see something on the screen and say, oh, well, they just, you know, got in front of the camera and did it. And it isn't that way.
Well, for those that haven't seen it, I mean, there are, I'm trying to think how many people, I don't know. It seems like 100 people are dancing throughout that number. I don't know the exact number. And give people an idea, if it's not choreographed, people are going to run into each other. I mean, it's just going to be natural because nobody's going to know what they're doing. So, of course, as you said, the rehearsal, the timing, so everybody hits that mark and the camera is ready to get that spot.
And don't forget different camera setups. You know, again, people think you just film the dance number one time and you're done. And it just doesn't work that way because you're always having to stop for the camera to be set up at a different angle. And, you know, that old expression, hurry up and wait. I mean, we did a lot of that too.
And yet with the magic of editing, it all looks like it's one big, you know, shot, one big scene.
I agree with you. I think that whoever edited the film did a brilliant job. I think it's a great film. It didn't get the greatest reviews I think they hoped it would. And it was definitely overproduced. Because a lot of people felt that the original Broadway show was a nice little musical show, but Fox liked making big budget musicals. They'd had a big hit with The Sound of Music, and they tried this several times again with musicals. And I think it's a great film, but it didn't bomb at the box office, but it didn't make back its cost originally. It made a nice profit when it came out, as it would any normal film. But it just didn't make back its cost. But people seemed to like it. And years later, Fox very proudly said that, oh, well, Hello Dolly and Cleopatra and Julie Andrews, movie star, they were all big financial hits. Well, they could say that now because after TV sales and video cassette sales and DVD sales, those three movies are finally in the black. But it took decades to do that, you know. But now the studio says they're big hits.
It just took a little time.
It did. But I think the public liked it. I really think they really liked it. And even though a lot of people criticized that Miss Streisand was too young for the part, which as originally written was that of a middle-aged woman, I think she pulled it all great. And she herself said she was not a dancer, but you wouldn't have known it in that number with us because she was right there with us. And I thought she was spectacular.
I thought she's, well, I still think she's wonderful, and I thought she was wonderful in that movie and a lot of other movies. And I know sometimes people give her this rap of being a perfectionist and things like that, but when you are a performer to her level, and there's a lot of other performers that are at this level too, they expect everybody to rise up with them, and because they know this is going to be captured on film, this is something you're trying to put out to the audience. So yeah, they're looking for certain things, but they're actually looking for what we, the viewer, are going to be seeing. And I think I respect that.
Yeah, I do too. And I'm, you know, if you really wanted to do a good job, you did want to be a perfectionist. And luckily for me at that time, I was a quick study and I could pick up a routine very quickly. But I always had a good, very good work ethic. And it wasn't anything that was pounded into me. It's just something I felt. I worked with some guys, you know, in different films and shows that were great dancers, some even better than me. And they just weren't punctual all the time. They just didn't take it always seriously. And what they failed to realize was that if you don't do those things, no matter how good you are, they're not going to want you because you wouldn't be responsible. And it's a very expensive industry. And some of my coworkers never seem to get that. But I never had a problem with that. I was always early and I stayed as long as they wanted me to. I never complained about it. And that's probably one of the reasons why I got as many jobs as I did get.
It could very well be because a lot of people are looking for performers and also crew that have the right attitude to work or team players. And then once you get that reputation of being a good team player and a person who's going to get the job done, not going to cause any hassles or fuss, then you're going to be utilized again and again because your reputation is good.
And that's a big part of it. It isn't just about talent. You're right. But that's, you know, it's not true of any job that you can work. If you work in a post office, you work in a drugstore, you want to be dependable. You want to be on time, you know, or even being earlier is even better, and do the best you can, because no matter what the job is, if you're not there, it still costs whatever company it is money. And time is money in business, and you have to respect that.
Oh, I definitely. Now, not only were you with Mr. Izan, but you were also with Satchmo, Louis Armstrong, in a number. I mean, that's got to be something, you know, being there, knowing that you were with legendary history of two different performers in the same number.
He was in part of the number. We didn't actually deal with him because he was over to the side and they had a little segment where the two of them sang bits of the song together. And then she rejoined the fellas, you know, for the rest of the number. But I do remember he would come on set and you know, you couldn't mistake that gravelly voice of his, you know, and he was just as friendly as he could be. And he would see us and he'd walk over to us and he'd, this is going to be a terrible impersonation, but so bear with me. He would come over and say, "How you doing, fellas? Everything copacetic?" You know, and that's just who he was. And of course, he was a legend to all of us. And we all were glad that he was in the film. But we really didn't have anything to do with him in it. We were just fans.
But still, he took time to go over to you guys just to even say, "How you doing, fellas?" I mean, he could have just not did anything at all with you because he knew he wasn't going to be performing with you or doing that stuff. And I think that just shows sometimes people are just more grounded than others. You know, they're like, "Oh, we're all in the crew together, and let me go talk to these guys for a second."
Well, you know, when you see him in the movies, and he seems really jolly and friendly and having such a good time, that's the way he was in real life. So it just, you know, spilled over onto the films he made. But he was very well liked.
And that's always good to hear, you know, because you always have these certain people. You always hope that are they nice when they're not on stage or when they're not performing. And this is one that is.
Absolutely.
Now you went from working with a couple of legends in that film to with another legend in 1974. I mean, Lucille Ball. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, she was, well, the person that originated the role of Mame was, as you know, Angela Lansbury.
Yes.
Who we unfortunately lost last year. My very good friend, Ron Masak, who played the sheriff on Murder, She Wrote with her, died 11 days later. And that's just really, it was horrible for all of us that were his good friends. And anyway, when she was chosen for the part of the movie, it was because at that time, Angela Lansbury wasn't considered a big enough movie name to draw in the crowd. So they went with Lucy, who was a well-known name. And she was very professional. She was not a good singer, but she, you know, she did stay on key, which, you know, that's something anyway. You mentioned Streisand being a perfectionist. I think Lucille Ball was even more so, because when she was so used to running her own TV shows, and things were how she wanted them to be, and on MAME, she just wanted to have the best film we could make. And, you know, she was there to give her level best, and she expected you to give your level best. And if you didn't, you would probably hear about it. But, you know, I didn't get to really know her, but, you know, she was very professional. She knew her shtick. And, you know, it was a very brief moment of film with her. But I can at least say that I danced backwards with Lucille Ball.
Yeah, she was leading you, right?
She was. She really was. And, you know, I really was going backwards, you know, and that's, unless you're well rehearsed enough, you can very easily trip over your own feet doing that. So you don't want to do that with Lucille Ball.
No, that would definitely be a downward turn for somebody's career. You're the one who tripped Lucille Ball and fell on her. That would not be good.
And she had to be out for a while. She'd been in a skiing accident, and she broke a foot or an ankle or something. So she was out for a while. The film was supposed to come out in 73, but, you know, since she was the star of the movie and they'd already filmed so much of it, they had to really wait for her to actually recover. And that's why the film came out as late as it did. But she was a trooper. I got to say that for her. I mean, she was the boss no matter what she was on, even if there was somebody else directing her or producing something, she was still the boss. She just took charge. She liked to do that. And as it turns out, she was pretty much right all the time.
Well, I think after all these decades of running like her own production company and TV shows and starring in them, you pretty much get a good idea what's going to work and what's not going to work, especially for her and what she's trying to do. So it helps if people, you know, smartly listen to the performer in this particular case, and who's going to argue with Lucille Ball. I mean, you definitely end up on the losing side.
I got to be in the first episode of her. At that time, they thought it was her last TV show called Here's Lucy. She came back years later as an older actress to do another show that didn't last a whole season. I think it was called Life with Lucy or Laugh with Lucy. I'm not sure. But anyway, Here's Lucy was supposed to have been her last show on TV, and I got to be in the first episode of that because the second half of the episode was a musical number. And so I got to be in that, and again, she was somebody like Streisand who said, I'm not a dancer, I can't dance. Well, you wouldn't have known it because she was letter perfect. But I find that to be true of all of the great stars. You know, they all made it look easy, and if they didn't have a certain skill, they learned it. That was the job, and they did it. And I admire them for that.
Well, you have to, because a lot of them are performers. Like I said, with Barbara Streisand and Lucille Ball, I think Lucille Ball started back in the vaudeville days, and where you're used to doing a whole bunch of different things, and you have to do the best you can at all of them and really learn them, because you don't know when the audience is coming in, what the particular part of the act they're going to be seeing, and you got to be able to perform it well. And I think that just stays with you all the way through. So, but also they're cognizant of knowing their strengths and their weaknesses, and they work on their weaknesses to try to keep them from being as weak and to strengthen them up.
Absolutely. And they were all professionals, every one of them from that era.
Now, you got to work, like I said, in four classic movies, and one of them, I mean, for some people, it might be their favorite musical of all. It's not one of my favorites. I enjoy it, but it's not one of my all-time favorites. But you got to work in 1978's Grease.
And it's not one of your favorites?
It's not one of my favorites.
Hanging up.
I enjoy it, but everybody has different tastes. I'm more of an old school musical guy. I like Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. I love those kind of things. You know,
the MGM musicals especially, those are my favorites.
Yankee Doodle Dandy. I mean, those are the ones that really I jive to. Grease, my daughter adores. My wife adores. I enjoy. I'm being honest, though. I could lie, but I'm being honest.
Well, it when it came out, it was very popular, despite the fact that some, you know, there's always some critics that are not going to like anything. And I remember a critic back in those days by the name of Judith Crist, and she just didn't seem to like anything. And that was her way of seeing things. And but a lot of people found fault with the fact they said the leading actors were too old to be playing teenagers. And I suppose they were, but I think they pulled it all beautifully. I think it's a lot of, it's really a fun film. It was re-released earlier this year again, and I went to see it and enjoyed it all over again.
And I think for those,
I was in both of those, actually. I was in both Grease movies.
Oh, really? You were in Grease 2 also?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that one, that really deserved the bad reviews it got. And the only good choreography was the beginning number that we were in called Back to School Again. But they hired actors who were apparently a little closer to the age of the teenagers. And it was one of Michelle Pfeiffer's first films. But the choreography was by a lady named Pat Birch. And she also directed this one. She did the choreography in the first one and in the second one, but she also directed the second film. For some reason, either the choreography wasn't good and later in the film, I think it was the actors. These were not trained dancers. Mm. And it was, if you look at that film, the very end of Grease 2, it's horrible. It's absolutely horrible, the dancing, because they're all out of step. Just like the Paul Lynn special I did. That dancers were all out of step in Grease 2, and they just, I'm sure they tried their best, but they just weren't dancers. They just didn't have it to do. So that kind of tanked to the box office, and it kind of deserved to.
Well, I was just
sorry,
say,
Pat Birch.
I was going to say, with the first Grease, with people complaining about them being too old for the roles, I'm always remembering the movie The Blob with Steve McQueen, where, mm-hmm. you know, he's like one of the oldest teenagers ever. And still I enjoyed it, you know? And so to me, some people get hung up with this. Oh, they're a little too old for that or a little too young for this. It's just, are you buying the performances? Are you enjoying the show? If you're enjoying the show, then you can let a lot of things go. And I think that's what you brought up with Grease too. If you're looking at certain things and you're just like, oh, I'm not enjoying it, then you start to nitpick certain things. And it takes more and more effect.
That's why they call it suspending disbelief, because a lot of times you have to just enjoy the film. You know, even though it doesn't seem quite right or quite logical, if you're enjoying it, that's why they make movies, so that you can enjoy them.
So, what was it like working on Grease? You know, what were some of the memories you had with it?
You didn't really. Because you can barely, if at all, see me in that, because there were so many of us. And a lot of times I got put towards the back because I was tall. And so I thought to myself, I'm crazy about that, but okay. But I did get to meet some of the stars in passing. I found Olivia Newton-John was just charming to everybody. She seemed to have a very natural charm and kindness about her. And that's why when she finally lost her battle with cancer, you know, it was a big worldwide thing. You know, we all missed her, because she was just a very nice person. And that's not just what I observed. I've heard that from many, many people through the years that have known her personally and worked with her. And it's always the same. I've never heard a negative word said about her. She was just wonderful. I thought Dee Dee Khan was so funny. She played Frenchie in the film. She was funny. She liked to talk to people. Some years later, she wrote a really great book about the making of it. You know, it was a very entertaining book. But she just was this person with a great personality. And Blackside, I didn't really get to know them well, just pretty much in passing, because like I said, there were a lot of us. And if you did meet one of these people and got to say a few things to them, it was just a lucky happenstance, you know. But I did. It was a totally happy experience for me, and I think the other dancers felt the same way.
As I say, because it's one of the things I do enjoy about Grease is the energy level that you can feel throughout the production. You know, it's just
oh yes,
it's right there. And I'm sure as a dancer, that's got to be something that just makes you want to show up. You're ready to go. You're going into rehearsals. I mean, yes, it's grueling, but also you're enjoying it. And it's sad when you're not always going to be featured, shown like in a picture, you know, and that kind of stuff. Cause you're, like you said, you're in the background. Oh yeah. I'm the fifth guy back on the sixth side. If you blink and you squint, you can see me, but yeah, you're not on the screen really. But the whole thing is you were there. And I think just being, as you said earlier, seeing how these productions are done, seeing how things are running on the behind the scenes part is stuff that the rest of us don't get to see at all.
Well, that's true. That's absolutely true. And that movie had some great dancers. I mean, the original movies had great dancers. I mean, you couldn't get better. They just were wonderful. And like I said, Patricia Birch did the choreography for both. But I think, I think the director of the first one was Randall Kleiser. I think he was the director of the first one. And he kept. If you look at this film, you'll notice that there's great pacing on this film. There's never a moment where this film stops. And that's why by the time the end comes, you're like, oh, it's over already. But that's what he did. He brought great pacing to that film. And I think it shows on screen.
Oh, I do too. And a lot of times you want a movie to have, you don't want, especially a musical, you don't want it to have this spot where it just lags, where people are just like, oh, what's going on? It for musicals, that's almost, to me, like a kiss of death, you know, if it hits a spot where you're just waiting for something to happen, it's always got to be in motion. And I think that's what Grease does, keeps everything moving.
Absolutely. It does. It's, in my opinion, a great film.
I'm just, you know, like I said, I enjoy it. I'm not saying I hate it or I enjoy the movie. It's just not one of my favorites. I mean,
yeah, I get it. Yeah, I understand completely. There are some movies I say, okay, fine, whatever. You know, another film I did was Xanadu, and that tanked at the box office. I liked it. I think, again, it was something that was overproduced. And it was Olivia Newton-John's follow-up to Grease. But you know, it was fun because there was great dancing in that as well. And we got to dance on roller skates.
I got to ask you, believe it or not, I enjoy Xanadu.
Good. I'm glad.
and you know, the right age, right time. And Olivia Newton-John, but Gene Kelly, I mean, come
yes,
on, you're working with the legend. I mean, or one of, if you're like to write a list for musicals and put down the Mount Rushmore, you know, the top four, he's one of the top four.
and I might be speaking personally when I say this. I think he was the greatest movie dancer of all. Astaire has his adherents, and he really was great too. What I liked about Mr. Kelly was that he was more of a, well, Mr. Astaire was more of an elegant dancer, and Mr. Kelly was more of a, I'm the man from the streets type dancer. And I think a lot of people warmed to that, but I found him to be a very kind man. He was very good to me. He was a mentor to me. And do you want to hear a quick story about Mr. Kelly?
Anything about Gene Kelly, you feel free to talk. Cause I love his performances. And again, I enjoyed Xanadu too. So, I mean, I didn't even know you were in Xanadu till you brought it up. So this is like magic to me.
Well, I can link the two films, Dolly and Xanadu, with him, because he was the director of Dolly. He was not the choreographer. The choreographer was a great man whose name I will not mention, but he was very cruel to me. And I was a kid. I was a teenager, and for some reason he took an instant dislike to me, and he called me every filthy name in the book. You know, I wouldn't have hired you. You're lousy. You stink. You know, he would just go on these rampages, and I'd be standing just shaking, you know, and the other guys would be, they kind of come around me like they're going to be protecting me, you know, and because I was young. Anyway, one time he got so angry at me for whatever it was I don't know why he didn't like me, but he stormed off the set. The AD calls lunch. Mr. Kelly's up on the boom, and there's just silence. You could hear a pin drop. And all of a sudden he starts coming down to the floor level, and nobody's saying a word, and everybody's standing there. And he gets off the room, and he starts walking in our direction, and then it dawns on me that he's walking in my direction. I like to think of, well, you know what? This is going to be fun to tell the kids back at school. I got fired from my first job. And so, you know, he came over to me, no expression. Then he walks to me, puts his arm around my shoulder. He says, you know something, kid? You got something. Don't let the bastards get you down. Well, you know, I mean, what do you say to that? I think I might have mumbled a thank you, but it was a mumble, whatever it was. And we got along very well. And through the years, we'd meet up. He'd give me advice. He always called me kid. And when I was younger, I'd think to myself, I'm grown up. No, I'm not a kid. You know, what I wouldn't give to be called that nowadays. But he every time he would see me, he'd say, hey, kid. You know, but he just warmed my heart. He was a very good man. He could be tough on people. He's also a perfectionist. But he was very good. If you knew your job and you had enthusiasm for it, you know, you got along with Mr. Kelly. And if you didn't mind him correcting you, he might be a little rough with you when he corrected you, but you knew that it was for your own good and for the good of the project. And so you didn't take offense to that. So years later, he was in Xanadu. He was Olivia Newton-John's co-star. By the way, Xanadu is a remake of a Rita Hayworth movie called Down to Earth from 1947. So if you ever get a chance to see that movie, Xanadu is actually a remake with different music. And so anyway, he was on that, and we were on the set. We were all on roller skates. And he was on one part of the stage talking to him. He was the only older person there. He was on another part of the stage talking to a bunch of the young people. We were waiting to start filming, and I was on the other side of the stage with some other dancers. But you know, you could hear him talking to these other guys and gals, and he was telling them how this was not his first time dancing on roller skates, and which is true. He did a film in 1955 called "It's Always Fair Weather," where he literally tap danced on roller skates. I've never seen that since, you know, but he was great. And at the beginning of the number, we did some tapping too with the roller skates, but then it turned into an actual, you know, roller skating number after that. And so the people just fascinated, listen, because he could tell good stories. And then he turned in my direction one point, and he saw me, and he yells out, kid! I said, oh, no. and he literally came skating over to me, and he once again put his arm around his shoulder. He said, good to see you again, kid. You know, you really got something. I said, you keep telling me this. What's going to happen from this, you know? And he says, keep it going, kid, keep it going. And he was a really good man. I talked to him not too long before he died, and he'd had a stroke, but he was still able to function happily. But, you know, it was a bittersweet last visit, you know, before he passed on. But I just think he was the greatest person I've ever known in the business. He certainly was my mentor, and I learned a lot from him through the years. Thank you for asking me about Mr. Kelly. I appreciate that.
no problem. And I'm just glad to know in Xanadu, because what was it like, though, to dance on roller skates? I mean, I've seen the movie many times, and I know, and he's done it, like we already mentioned, twice. But still, it was just something, you know, yes, it was the disco era, yes, and all that stuff, you know, everybody's roller skating, but how hard was it for you to adapt to using the roller skates in the dancing number?
Not at all, because I was a roller skater all of my life. And so you just had to learn. I mean, like I said, initially it started out being something of a tap, but then we started all moving out in all these different directions, and, you know, depending on what the choreographer wanted you to do, sometimes you might like twirl in a circle, you know, they had us all doing all different things. And it was a lot of fun. But the thing of that was, you know, we were doing a lot of things, but you had to make sure you matched up with each other, that you didn't, like you said earlier, not run into each other. But it wasn't that difficult. And I was very much at home on roller skates. It had been one of my favorite things to do. And so I just picked it up. And like I said before, in those days, I was a very quick study. It took me maybe once or twice to see a number, and I had it. So that was something I was very fortunate to have. So that wasn't difficult at all.
And that is a talent that you definitely want in the industry you're in, you know, where it's like, oh, once or twice, oh, he's got it. You know, you don't want anybody that's slow to pick up things.
Absolutely. You know, and I was lucky to be able to do that. I had a good reputation for reliability, and I couldn't see it any other way. Yes, people look at it and say, oh, it must have been so much fun to be in the movies and TV and blah, blah, blah. You know, it really was, but you were there basically to work. You wanted to turn out a product like any other job, and you wanted to do it to the best of your ability.
And that's what I think a lot of people don't realize is that most of the people that are involved in the movie industry, the vast, vast majority, you're doing it for the love and to make a living, but a lot of people don't even make a living on that performance. Like they usually will work something else, or they work multiple productions in order to make the, you know, a living throughout the year. It is a tough business, but it is a job. And we all remember like the Gene Kellys and the Lucille Balls, the ones that are at the top of the top, but there's so many people that are not at that spot. And it's a daily, you know, just like everybody else, it's a daily struggle. They work to get the stuff done, and it's a production, and you're just doing your normal job.
That's right. You know, it's a little different than working at the AMP, I guess, but you know, it is a job.
Now, you're in a movie I remember seeing when it came out. I actually haven't seen it since, but I did enjoy it when I saw it. And that's The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. I remember seeing it in the theaters. So I was, you know, and that kind of stuff. What are some of your memories of that one? Because that one had an interesting cast.
Yes, it did. Once again, as with Streisand and Dolly, the two lead characters in that play were middle-aged people. And the people that when they bought I think it was Universal. Yep. Universal, I think in partnership with somebody else, they bought the rights to make a movie out of it. Again, it's all about profit. You know, you want to bring people into the theaters, and they felt that having two middle-aged people, you know, heading the cast in the movie would not be such a good idea. It worked okay on stage. And Burt Reynolds was big news then. I mean, he was big news. And they thought of him immediately for the sheriff. And so they decided to make the two lead characters younger. Well, who better to play a whore than Dolly Parton? That was their philosophy, you know. And, you know, and she herself later, she was being interviewed in England, and they asked her what was the big difference between that and the movie she'd done before that, which was 9 to 5. And she said to the crowd, that made it with typical Dolly humor, she goes, I think I made a better whore than a secretary. And, you know, but she was, I don't know, why does one describe Dolly Parton about being vulgar? She is what she is. She puts herself out there as a certain type. I personally don't think she's really like the character she plays, but that's what she's selling. She's selling Dolly, the glittery girl, the woman who can play a whore and everybody loves her for it. A lot of people didn't like the filming experience. She said herself that she goes, there was blood on the project. There was a lot of things people didn't like, people that were getting along. Fortunately, when you're in my position, being just one of the dancers, you don't really have to deal with the big problems as a rule. So we didn't have that problem. I think it turned out great. I think people bought the idea that these middle-aged characters were made younger, and it worked. I think they chose the two best people for those jobs. I remember one scene. I was one of the Aggies, and we had. Well, if you saw how slender I was in those days, you would have thought of me as a football player. You know, but luckily I didn't have to do any of that. And so there was a senator. I was a wonderful actor named Robert Mandan. I don't know if you remember him or not. And he played the senator, and the senator's promise that if the Aggies won the football game, we'd be treated out to a night at the whorehouse. And so, of course, the Aggies won the game. And so they were all waiting for us while we got there. And we're standing there in the entryway of this, of the whorehouse. And here comes Miss Parton walking down the steps. And I swear, I was so afraid at one point she was going to literally pop out of that dress. It was so low and she was so top heavy that I was glad they weren't filming us at the same time, because you've seen a lot of drooly guys, you know, standing there watching her come down these steps, you know. And but she was something. And, you know, again, you really get to learn something about people during the setups, the way the stars talk to people. And she was always very friendly. She would greet all of us, and, you know, and we're trying to, while she's speaking to us, we're trying to look at her face. You know, if you catch my meaning, you know, and try not to drop your eyes. But she, that if you remember that scene at all, that was a very low cut dress, and she was just lucky that it held together. But you know, all things told, I you know, we were treated well. It was some on location filming. I think the musical numbers came together well. She contributed two songs to the score. One was called "Sneaking Around." That was about her and the Burt Reynolds character meeting in secret, because he was a sheriff and she was a madam. And then she had already written a song called "I Will Always Love You." And so she brought those two songs into the film, and it worked. But, you know, that's just a long way around, I guess, of telling you it was another good experience. I think the people at the upper levels were not happy. There was a lot of problems at that end, but where I was, it was a good shoot, and it was my last movie.
Well, the thing is, I think, as you said, if there's problems at the top with production, you hope it never gets down to everybody else that's working on it. And so as much as there are some issues going on, at least it was kept, for the most part, above, so nobody else really suffered all the like possible turmoil. Because, you know, I've read some things about certain productions where word gets out and then everybody is scared and then panicking, and the next thing you know, the whole production suffers because of the morale decline. So at least it was able to keep from everybody else.
Absolutely. I agree completely. And I like the film. It made a lot of money. I know the critics, most of the critics weren't crazy about it, but I give very little thought to what critics think anyway. I like what I like. There was a movie that came out with Madonna called "Who's That Girl" some years later. And I just watched it again the other day. It's absolutely hysterical. She is so funny in it. It got the worst reviews. Leonard Maltin gave it a bomb rating. And I don't get that. I think it's enormously funny, and she was great in it. But there again, I give very little credence to what critics think. That doesn't interest me.
My whole theory is if I'm entertained and during the movie, then the movie did its job. You know, and that's
absolutely
that's the thing. You know, whether other people are entertained or not, well, that's why there's like millions of movies out there. So there's certain movies that I like, there's going to be certain movies that you like, and everybody can pick their movie.
That's right.
Now, during your dancing career, you also were involved in some, as you alluded to earlier with Paul Lynde, some TV specials. And do you want to talk about any of those particular specials?
Yes, the Paul Lynde Halloween special. I think it was 1976. I don't believe he was ever asked to make a variety special. But back then, they were still making variety shows like the Carol Burnett Show and Sonny and Cher and all these people. You know, you have a nice mixture of comedy and music and dance. And I'm so sorry those are gone now. But anyway, he was very popular because he made a big hit playing Uncle Arthur on Bewitched. And I think he was on another show that I can't remember the name of right now. But anyway, he was hot. And so ABC decided to give him his own special set at Halloween time. And you would have thought it would have come out great. He had, as his guest stars, he had Florence Henderson. He had Tim Conway. Do you remember Roz Kelly, Pinky Tuscadero from Yes. Happy Days?
Yes.
She was so gorgeous and so talented. And she was one of the guest stars. And they had Billy Hayes, who's Witchy Poo on H.R. Puff and Stuff. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine, she was, oh, just a delight. And that cackling laugh of hers would just make you laugh every time. And they brought her in costume as Witchy Pooh, and they brought in Margaret Hamilton, who had been the Wicked Witch and the Wizard of Oz, dressed up pretty much like she was in that movie. And it was a very strange show because Margaret Hamilton was Poland's housekeeper, and as it turns out, she was a witch, and she took him to see her sister, who was Witchy Pooh, in this haunted castle. The whole thing was such a disaster, Steve, and I got to tell you, there was a number we did at the end. The only people that got the number right was Roz Kelly and the dancers. It was a fiasco. They had Tim Conway on the standing to the side. He was trying to watch the others' movements, and he was getting so twisted up. Florence Henderson was on the other side. She was doing her own dancing and having a good time. She just wasn't in step with the rest of us. And neither was Tim Conway. The only and Paul Lynn, forget about it. You know, and the only person of the stars that was in step was Roz Kelly, because I believe she was a professional dancer too. I think so. And she was great. And so, luckily we didn't try to follow anybody because we'd have gotten lost too. We saw everybody else out of step, and we just figured, well, you know, what the heck, just do our thing that we were trained to do. What I don't get is, it wasn't like this was new to these stars. We'd all rehearsed this many times, and they just couldn't get it. And then that was such a disparate number of guest stars. But guess who else was a guest star in that special? Kiss. Who would have put Kiss in that group? And they looked like they would rather have been anywhere but there. It was awful. I think when it came on television, I think the reviews were just horrendous. And I have a good friend named Rob Floyd. He and his family used to run the Williamsburg Film Festival in Williamsburg, Virginia. And when I told him about that one time, I said, one of the cringe-making moments of my career. He says, I love that show. You've really risen in my estimation. I said, well, that tells you something. But it was one of the worst jobs I might have been the worst TV job I was ever in. And it was awful. And like I said, the talents they brought in were so different from each other. And then why Kiss agreed to do it, I don't, to this day, I can't figure that one out. But if you ever get it, and it's on a DVD, believe it or not. So if you ever get a chance, and it's on YouTube as well. And it's really awful.
I remember, I believe I have vague memories of seeing this when it came out. Cause I would have been about like 8 years old. So I think I saw this when it was first run.
I think it was at the level of 8 year old. So,
so at eight, it was, you know, it was something. And, well, you gotta say it might not be the worst holiday special because I mean, doesn't everybody always say Star Wars is, you know, the Christmas special is like the worst one. So maybe it's right up there with it. Maybe they should duke it out.
You know, well, just about everybody's dead in it. You know, I think Roz Kelly is still alive, but you know, just about everybody else is gone, and maybe they're happy about that. Oh me, awful, just awful. But it was a paying job, and you know, in movies and television, you're in the union, so you know you're going to get more than $25 a week, obviously, you know, for working. So it was a job, and those jobs paid well, and you went where the work was. But that was pretty awful.
Well, I think there's a good thing and a bad thing. The bad thing about being somewhat like a dancer, where people don't remember you from movie to movie, is that they don't mm-hmm. remember it from movie to movie. The good thing, when you do a production like this, nobody remembers it was you.
Well, yeah, that's true too, isn't it? Yeah. Oh, golly, Moses. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, what can you say?
I was gonna say there's good and bad in everything, but were you involved in any other specials?
Yes, I was one of Mitzi Gaynor's regular dancers on her special. She would have, I think it was almost 10 years, she would do a special a year, and they were big ratings winners. And so I got to be one of her boys, as she called us. And when I first met her, she was already in her 40s, and she had, I guess she had the most spectacular looking body of any female celebrity I had ever known. And like I said, by this time she was already in her 40s, and she could do high kicks, she could do splits, she could do all sorts of things because she kept in shape all those years. And she plus it didn't hurt that she was very beautiful. But her specials, now that was something different. Where Paul Lynn, you know, belongs in the trash can, Mitzi Gaynor's specials were always very highly reviewed and very popular in the ratings, because the audience knew that they were, when you saw the name Mitzi Gaynor, oh, great, we're going to see great entertainment. And so we worked, and she was extremely nice to get along with, and she went out of her way to try to get to know us. It warms my heart that she's still alive today. You know, you see her on Facebook every once in a while, and she's, you know, always being very positive about things in her life. And so I'm glad to see that one of the classic era stars is still with us, you know. And I don't believe she dances anymore. I think she's in her 90s now, if I'm not mistaken. But she was pretty spectacular to us. There wasn't a person in that troupe that didn't like her. We all just adored her. It was a lot of fun, a lot of work, of course, but a lot of fun work. I guess really, I don't have a whole lot of bad things to say about the career, because, you know, it was mainly, you know, very pleasant, very happy times. And I know a lot of people in the business can't say that, but I guess I was just one of the lucky ones.
Well, it sounds like it. I mean, in a sense, right off the bat, Gene Kelly calling you kid and befriending you. And then, of course, you get to do what you love to do, which is perform, and you're getting paid to do it. I mean, who can argue with that?
You got that right. and those were good times, because, like I said, they were still doing variety shows, and they were still movie. Well, I had a friend back then that said, "You know, your whole career has been one of endings." And I said, "What do you mean by that?" He says, "Well, you started working at movie musicals; they're going out. You started working at TV variety shows; they're going out." And I said, "Well, really, kind of wish I hadn't put it that way, but I guess you're right." You know, so you just, you know, and luckily, you know, when stage work came along, anybody that wants to be any kind of an actor in the movies or TV, that's terrific. But I really recommend people get work on the stage, because it's great experience, and you learn stamina. You know, you do eight shows a week, you know, and you need that strength and stamina. And like I said, it's great experience. I wouldn't have missed it for anything. I did a lot more stage shows than I did movies or television shows.
Well, that would make sense, especially as your friend brought up that the time and everything is hitting, and then that's where you have the regular work to get the experience, and then of course you're still developing the connections, and people were able to see you. You know, they can go, it's like, "Oh, we're looking for a dancer, or we're looking for this and that," and they go, "Well, let's go to the musical that's playing over here," and then boom, you're basically auditioning without even knowing it.
Yeah.
But I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to let me talk to you about these different movies that you were involved in and TV specials. And I think I learned a lot, and I hope other people did too, because not everybody, like you told me when I asked you about you, "I'm not a celebrity like these people or that person." But the thing is, you were involved in the industry, and you have stories that we don't normally, as I said earlier, get access to or experiences. And it's nice that you were able to share some of those with us.
Well, I appreciate you including me, that you thought I was worthy of an interview. I have to tell you, I am deeply honored. Thank you very much.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine. Thank you. You're welcome. Hi, everybody. I hope everybody enjoyed the episode. I want to thank Herb again for letting me interview him. And I just want to thank people for listening to the show and remind you that if you hit the subscribe button or the follow button, whatever button that's featured in your podcast catcher, you'll know when new episodes come out, so you can hear what interviews or movie discussions are coming out next. Please send feedback to us at diecastmoviepodcast@gmail.com or leave us a message on our Facebook page. And I also want to remind listeners that Diecast Movie Podcast also does a movie discussion series dedicated to Hammer films called Hammerama with Alistair Hughes and myself. And we'll soon have a new episode coming out Cash on Demand. And just to remind everybody, if you subscribe, you'll know when it's coming. It should be coming out in one or two episodes after this. If you want more ideas on what Hammerama is about, let me play the promo for you. Otherwise, thanks for listening. Everybody have a good day. Bye.
I'm Al from New Zealand.
And I'm Stephen from Maryland, USA.
We are Hammerama. Welcome to our new podcast. Enter freely. And of your own will.
Part of the multi-award-nominated diecast movie podcast, Hammerama is a wide look at the world of Hammer horror from either side of the globe.
Each month, we will throw a die to decide which category from the film vault of Hammer we are going to discuss. The Dracula, Frankenstein, or Mummy cycles, science fiction, prehistory, or the experimental 1970s.
We will cast our international eyes across then and now, reviews of the movie,
its place in the Hammerverse,
our encounters with the stars,
a film poster critique,
and unusual associated merchandise.
So join us for our bite-sized discussion of Hammer's gory glories, stitched together from both ends of the earth.
Hammerama is a proud part of the Diecast Movie Podcast.